Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Waiting Warriors podcast. It's been a while, but we are here to reconnect with you and continue our mission to share important military spouse stories and resources. As many of you know, it's been a challenging couple of years for me. Life took a very unexpected turn, and our son James was stillborn, and I had to take a step back to heal, grieve, and find my way through the storm. During this time, your support and understanding has meant the world to me, and I am deeply grateful for so many kind messages, your patience, and the love you've shown. I am excited to bring this podcast back, and I have plans to make it even better than before. I had done a dozen or so interviews before we lost James. And since the guests and the content were so good, I can't not publish them. But for my mental health, I'm not going to edit them the same as I normally would. So please forgive any mistakes, any little weird things. But I am excited for you to hear these amazing military spouses, and then season two of the Waiting Warriors podcast will be coming shortly. Enjoy the interview. Hey, Waiting Warriors out there. Welcome to another week on the Waiting Warriors podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Bowler, and this week we have Shannon Lako. Welcome to the show, Shannon.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We are excited to have you. Shannon's all fancy. Shannon's an author, guys. She's all fancy. I don't know. I think authors are super fancy because writing is something, is not a skill I have yet.
Listen, if it's fancy because I really like breastfeeding, just wearing nursing tanks the entire time. So if that's fancy, then we can, but that's all it was.
It is fancy. It's to me, I don't know. Okay. Don't laugh at me. Most listeners know, like, I don't swear, but that's BA. And that's what I'll say. But you guys hear that however you want. A woman who can write a book while breastfeeding and all that, it's legit. Anyway, Shannon's an author, a stay-at-home mom in Alaska. Her husband has been in the Coast Guard for 15 years, and they've been married for 5 years and have two kiddos, which is, that's a pretty good life.
It's awesome. We're up to the Alaska. So we've been here for a year and a half. Kids were born on the same day. So my daughter was born here in Alaska. She's one. My son is three. They were both born on Christmas Eve. Yes, it was so crazy. And yeah, we just love our little lives in the process of adopting baby number three.
Yeah. So you adopt a baby who was born on Christmas Eve.
That'd be amazing. Yes. We're actually matched right now. So baby's born or is due here very shortly in just a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. That's so exciting.
We are only non-Christmas Eve baby, but I'm ready to have a not Christmas birthday. My husband's Christmas, yeah. Kids are Christmas, anniversaries around Christmas. Give me something else.
Yeah. That's cool. And I can understand. I had a friend whose birthday was around Christmas, and she always said it was the worst. And I can only imagine three birthdays plus anniversaries. So we can, baby number three can spread things out.
That's right. Let's have a spring baby.
Like complete opposite of winter baby. So you wrote a book, like I mentioned before, and the title is You're Completely Normal, which like makes me want to laugh, but also makes me want to cry.
I know, right? It's like a good thing, but kind of, no, I don't want to be normal.
It makes me laugh because yeah, like we are, right? I'm completely normal. I'm not crazy, but then it makes me laugh, right? I'm completely normal. I'm not crazy.
The thing is, we're like all crazy and our whole lives are crazy. And since all of us are just like a bunch of weirdos, that makes us all normal. Our lives all just all over the place. There's not a single person I've ever met that has stuff together. That's why I named the book You're Completely Normal, Trading Where You Think You Should Be for Where You Want to Go. Mm-hmm. Because we all think we should be at a certain point in our lives, whether it's career, family, or whatever. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. How have you learned this lesson, or has, because I feel like that's a life lesson that we all, I slowly but surely get repeating lessons of it and have to remember it more and more each time. But I know some people have like lessons ingrained in them. Has this kind of been one that's just always been in your back pocket, or how have you learned and
for years. I've had an essay blog for 10 years. I always knew, okay, I had to think of a topic and I didn't want it to be like just a memoir. And so finally, when I moved to Alaska, I realized like, what is the thing that is the thread in all my writing that draws people to my blog? And it was the fact that, hey, no one really knows what they're doing in life. And that comes from personal experience for me. I think in my 20s, I felt really behind because of relationships, right? Like I have always been a relationship person. I thought I was going to die alone. I was 26 before I met my husband and I had spent years in New York City pursuing a career on Broadway. I became Miss New York in the Miss America organization. And I had this like really fun early 20s, right? Like some pretty cool experiences, but all I wanted was a relationship and is not the way. And so I was worked up about that and feeling just behind as my friends were dating and then slowly getting married. And when you're late 20s, you just go to 15 weddings a year, it feels. And just feeling like I wasn't where I should be. I'm approaching 30, now I'm 27. Oh my gosh, only 3 more years. And you know how that timeline goes in your head where you're like, if I meet the love of my life tomorrow, I'll be 27. We have to date for 2 years. Then I'll be 29 when we get married. I want to be married for at least 3 years before we have kids. And so then I'm going to be 32. And if I want more than a couple kids, then I'm going to be like 38 by the time I'm done having kids. And you just go down this spiral. So that was my experience in my 20s. Of course, I end up meeting my husband. We only date for 2 months before we get engaged, which is insane. Married 4 months later. And then, of course, my little worry starts turning towards career. What am I doing with my life? I was pursuing musical theater, and then I worked for the federal sector in government down in the DC area. And then I was a personal assistant. I just felt like I had no idea what I was doing. And of course, then I magically fell into this dream career. I was working behind the scenes in reality television, trying to get shows on the air, working with Discovery and HGTV and different talent. And I was like in the zone, marry a military man, have kids. We moved to Alaska. Now what do I do with my career now? And so when I got here, I was like, okay, I always feel behind. I always feel like everyone has a career that they're thriving in. As we know, as first responder and military wives, oftentimes our careers get all messed up because we have to move or whatever. And relationships, we feel behind. And so I started looking into the 9 different areas of life that I saw women particularly feeling the most behind. And I was able to compile during my year of writing the book, research and studies using my background in psychology to prove that there is no such thing as a linear timeline in life. And that's whether you're talking about fitness and people meal prepping and you feel, oh my gosh, I'm so bad. Everyone else has it together and they're working out 5 times a week, or your career or friendships, feeling like as an adult, it's hard to make friends. So it was really fun to go through those 9 chapters and pull on my own fun experiences in life, but also use real statistical proof that there is no such thing as normal.
We're all just striving to be like everybody else, but everybody else is just making it up.
No one knows what they're doing. That's the truth right there. Nobody knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Which I feel like you can see the striving to be like everybody else and the thought that there's, I don't know if standard's the right word, but maybe a standard and like a path. I think you can really see that in the different waiting warriors, like jobs and spouses, because we have our small communities, right? Like a police department is a small, close-knit community. Same with firefighters. Same, I think military spouses may be a little bit bigger, but also still super small and close-knit. And you see exactly who is right at your, for those of you not watching, like quote-unquote stage in life. Yeah. And you see the people directly above you, again, big old quotes, if you're not watching on YouTube, but then time and time again, I've interviewed over 880, I don't know how many people for the Waiting Warriors podcast. I've had everybody from somebody who just got married a few months ago and had a funny honeymoon story, so we just had to talk about that. And somebody who's been in for, oh, what's the longest? I think we had like almost 30 years. Like, and yet even the 30-year-old is like, or not, she wasn't 30 years old, but even like everybody in between is like, I'm making it up. Still making it up. And it's so interesting. And yet still, I've interviewed all those people. And yet still, just the other day, I was like, oh, but I'm not where I should be. Like, I'm pretty sure I said those exact words to Austin.
And it's encouraging if you think about it. Because if no one knows what they're doing, then you can do whatever the heck you want. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because especially as women or just spouses in the military, or that's my experience with Coast Guard, or first responders. I have friends whose husbands are the police departments or firefighters, and they have their schedules all over the place with 24-hour shifts and all of that. And I think we think, okay, we're going to have to either figure out our career wherever we move or work our lives around our husbands, or we're going to be a stay-at-home mom and that's what we're going to be because we're a military spouse and that's what our job is as a military spouse, is to hold the family together, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so there are these narratives of what you should be doing as a spouse, as a waiting warrior. And once, especially once I moved to Alaska, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I know that I don't have a career that really fits to work full time in Alaska. I also know that I feel called to do something outside of the home. And so my son, who's three, is in part-time preschool or daycare, kind of, they still have school in the mornings, even though I don't have a job. And you have those people that looks like, oh, he's in school, but you're a stay-at-home mom. What are you doing with your time?
That's not being a stay-at-home mom. So what are you? Okay, I'm saying that super sarcastically. I just realized you could see my face, but then listeners might be like, whoa, Michelle, that was real. Very sarcastically, just to emphasize the point.
That it's, and it's just silly that people, especially when you combine motherhood with being a waiting warrior, there's just a lot of kind of expectations about what your role is, right? Yeah. Your role and what you should be doing is living your life, obviously supporting your spouse and your family and loving them, because that's what love is, and support is part of that. But it is not just forgetting everything that you care about and that is important to you. That's silly. Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? I want to write a book. And so we decided to live in a little bit smaller of a home so we could afford daycare so that I could for a couple hours in the morning. I started when I was pregnant, so that was crazy too. And then I had a newborn. I was so fulfilled this past year. It was such a beautiful year. I was healthy. My mother passed away of bladder cancer very quickly back in 2000. Thank you. Yeah, she was only 54. And we never figured out why she had bladder cancer. And she was convinced it had to do with stress. And that's something now that my husband and I are just extremely aware of. Like, my health as his wife and as the mother of his children is so important. It's more important than me following any norms and trying to prove to the world that I can hold down the house without any help. No, that's not what it's about. And that's probably my favorite message in the book, is the introduction is don't save the good wine. It's something my mom said to me right before she passed away when I asked, hey, mom, like, what is one thing that you really want me to know? And this was just days before she passed. And she said, Shannon, don't save the good wine. Because downstairs, she was upstairs. She said, downstairs, there's a bunch of bottles of wine that I was saving for a special occasion. And now I'll never know what they taste like. And man, that hit me. And it's something I try and live by every single day, is live now, live in a way that celebrates the way you want to be living, crack open the good wine, don't let stress and expectations run your life, live in the moment and live the way that you can be happy in the moment. And so I really believe that's listening to what works for you in your home. If you want to put your kid in part-time school and work part-time, work full-time, don't work at all. Just be with your kiddos 24/7. I don't care. Just make sure it's exactly what you want to be doing. And that is where you should be.
It makes me think of an interesting question, because I've been thinking about this for the last few weeks as we've gone back and forth in emails and preparing for the interviews. What are we supposed to do during life? And that has been on my mind a lot for the last, how long have I been pregnant? I don't know. I've lost track. I'm like really not good this time. I don't even know. By the time this airs, the baby will be here. But I'm like, no, this just doesn't air for a while, because I'm preparing because the baby's here. But I'm only 19 weeks. Think that's 19. But this whole pregnancy has been a lot of mood swings and just not low energy, which leads to not wanting to do anything, which leads, because of my personality, leads to existential crisis. What is life? You know what I mean? And then you come along and wait, what if you're completely normal and you're not behind? What is the point? And I know, depending on your spirituality level, I'm going to, being a very religious person and in a specific religion, I'm going to have a different answer than other people. And I don't ask this question to bum anybody out. And I'm really sorry if I do, because I know what it's like to be bummed out about that question. But it's an interesting question to ask yourself. And as you get that answer, you realize, at least I've realized, life is not about doing life how my neighbor does life or how whoever before me has done life. Like, it's such a personal thing. You know what I mean?
like you said, faith might come into it for people. For me, it certainly does. That is the answer for me. So much of my book, it's obviously going to be catered to Western culture, to American culture, the time that we see in our society. But the thread among each chapter, whether it's the chapter on friendships or career or activism and hobbies or household, like everyone feels behind if they don't own a house by the time they're whatever age, you keep up your home and all of those things, right? But the thread in each chapter, besides backing off the comparison game, is really, it's relationships. It's even for your home, what makes your life special are the people in it, the way it makes you feel, so that when you leave your home, you can focus in a clear way on the relationships you have in the world and what you're putting into the world. So you're not feeling bogged down by the space that you're in. So you can really thrive that way. Everything boils down to the way we interact with our communities and with the world. And that obviously can look extremely different from culture to culture too. And I think we forget that. What is the meaning of life? And all we know is what we see here in America. And when you look at the big picture, relationships are everything. And the way we love, that to me, beyond faith, is our definition. And what is the point? The point is to experience the depth of connection you can have with other people and with yourself, with this world, even with nature. I really think that. And that is such a fulfilling and beautiful thing to experience.
Yeah. And I don't know, depending on your faith, that is my faith. Love is my faith, and becoming a better person so I can love more because I'm such a faulted person. That is why I'm here and all that. And it's so interesting though, because you brought up, like, you know, obviously your book is catered to Western culture and stuff, but as I was in my, bachelor's undergrad degree, I did a lot of studying in humanities. And so I got to study different cultures, and I had really good teachers who questioned and pushed on the differences between that culture and Western culture, and how would often prove how neither is actually right. Do you know what I mean? And so it's just so interesting because we think we're behind. We think we aren't doing something that we're supposed to do, when actually what we're supposed to do is our relationships. Like, that's it. And everything else is just, what do you and your personality and your characteristics and your soul want to do past that? So why are we worrying about whether our dishes are done or not when our neighbor comes to for a play date, or whether we're wearing the blazer versus the t-shirt?
Only reason any of those, like, minor things, your sweater or dishes, right? They don't actually matter. They only matter. They fuel you to interact with the world and to put into the world your specific gifts, your specific personality, your specific relationship oriented things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for me, if my house is a disaster, right? Like, I don't feel like people are going to be as comfortable there. So I can't practice hospitality as much. Or if I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh girl, like, you're struggling today, then I'm not going to have the energy to interact with the world, right? Look good, feel good. Yeah. And I only believe that to an extent. Most of the days I am poppy buns, no makeup. This is the nicest I've ever looked. And for people who can't see me, I'm wearing a sweater and I have a little blush on, you know what I mean? So I'm not advocating.
Well, everybody has their different levels and stuff.
Exactly. And so, you know, I really do believe that relationships are everything, but I love what you just said about how another culture, like, they're, what's important to them and what their lives look like in terms of being normal is so different than ours. And using that not only to see how silly it is for us all to be comparing ourselves in our one little bubble of Western culture, but also, like, it makes me think about the adoption world a little bit. So we're adopting domestically. So a mom here in Alaska, specifically for us. So United States, a little different actually, because she's in a tribe. So it's, okay, there is culture there that is not typical to America, but still, that being said, international adoption, I have found to be really interesting because we were certainly interested in that avenue. And one of the things that I was going to have to do even more soul searching about if we had chosen that route, which we didn't for just different reasons, but is, as I was reading about it, like, realize that so many of the kids that we think need to be saved don't need to be saved. Like, their lives just look different than kids in America. That doesn't mean they have bad lives just because maybe they don't have their own room, or maybe there's certain, like, cushiness to living in the United States, but that doesn't mean that's better than being raised in their own culture by their own biological parents. And it's a fine line of understanding that, like, helping someone is good, but projecting your idea of normal onto them, especially in the world of adoption, is actually pretty dangerous. So yeah. That also keeps me in check when I think about my perception of normal.
How have you applied this message specifically in military spouse waiting warrior life? Just, do you know, like, we've touched on it, but how I've said my perspective, but what's your kind of perspective? How have you brought it in?
Yeah, I think for me, recognizing the message of the book myself and my own life has actually allowed me to live a freer life as a military wife. You know, I see a lot of my friends even, and they're like, how do you have so many friends in a new area, like in Alaska, so quickly? And they immediately think, oh, it's because you must be so great. And I'm like, guys, okay, first of all, you know me. Like, come on. Like, it's not because I'm great. It's because I recognize that we're all a little bit weird and we're all just trying to figure it out and nobody knows what they're doing. And that allows me to approach relationships without a facade. And beyond that, I think knowing that, for instance, building friendships, right? There's a chapter in my book, Building Up Friendships. And one of the statistics is that the average adult in the United States hasn't made a new friend in the last 5 years, if they're over the age of 23.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, especially if you're a woman who's moving every 2 to 3 years,
that means you don't have a friend at a duty station.
Exactly. And you feel like it's so easy. I've found in my experience with other military wives is you feel like something's wrong with you because you don't know how to make friends. Hey, y'all, you're normal. You're completely normal. It's a completely normal thing for you, for adults in the United States, to have trouble making friends. That's why people haven't in the last 5 years. There's proof that, gosh, 50% of friendships start in high school, 30% are what you find in college. After that, they plummet pretty quickly because finding people of proximity with similar interests and time and all of those things, you're not around those peer groups anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's difficult in and of itself. And so I think me logically knowing those things, it makes me understand, okay, the first 6 months that I'm going to be hanging out with a new person in a new area might feel awkward. Yeah. I'm not going to go into it expecting that it's going to be like fireworks, like it's a great first date. I know that if I put in the time, if I go to family group every Friday night, and the first 3 months, I don't want to go. I'm dragging my feet. I feel like I don't like people watching me eat. And my kids are going to ruin their house. And it's, oh, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with me just because it doesn't feel easy. And then you get used to it. After 3 months, all of a sudden, you're breastfeeding in front of them. You guys are like, lasagna's falling out of your mouth. Your kids are like wrestling and it's fine. But you have to break through that first couple of months where it doesn't feel good. And I think that's what holds a lot of people back and what makes them feel like it's them. And it's not them if it doesn't feel like fireworks. Different, I think, areas of life like that, like friendships and career and doing what's right for you, like we talked about a little bit before. So many women get in their own heads and thinking that it's their fault as a military spouse that it's hard to start a new life all over again. And it's really not. That's very normal. So once you realize that it's very normal for it to be hard, then you can learn to push through and realize that's what you need to do.
That's a really good point, because I have seen kind of those two camps of the people who have just realized that it's normal, it's going to be hard, but there's no chance that I am going through whatever's about to happen in this duty station without a friend type thing. And then there's people, because I cheat, guys, I talk to so many of you and I love it so much, but it's so interesting to just see the difference, because then there's people who are just like, I just don't understand why I don't have friends yet and things aren't reciprocated or what. Those are legit messages that I've gotten on Instagram, and it's not, there's nothing wrong with you.
Now, honestly, what it is, the external versus internal locus of control, saying, okay, am I in control of this? Like for me, I approach it like, okay, I moved to Alaska. My baby's due in 4 months and I honestly need someone to watch my toddler when I go. Right. So I better make friends real quick. And that sounds very selfish or whatever, but.
No, but I would I wish we could do a raise of hands right now on how many people have done that. Because I've done it twice. I know from church, like we had 1 year at church where we had 15 babies born in a year. And half of those were women who just moved there. They moved there at least 5 months pregnant type of a thing. And then all the other women so many of those women were like, oh, but maybe I need somebody to maybe watch my kid if that's not weird. And then there were like 20 of us like, no, that's, we have all done that. We have all done that. There were 20 of us women. No, I know exactly what that's like. It may feel selfish, but sorry, continue in your story.
No, I'm so glad that you're like actually being like, I'm making friends with you, but a little selfish because I need you to watch my toddler. Yes. So but speaking of the internal and external locus of control, I walked into Alaska. This is my job to make sure that I can make friends. And so it's going to happen, right? And I did what I needed to do. I joined the family group, or a woman at Safeway randomly walked up to me when I was pregnant and I had my toddler. And she was like, here's my card. I'm a newborn photographer. Also, I host like a story time on Tuesday mornings. Hope this isn't weird, but here's my card. Okay. It was weird, right? To like text her, hi, nice. This is Shannon. I met you at Safeway. I'll see you Tuesday morning, right? Things like that. But I decided it was within my control to build these relationships instead of why does nobody want to hang out with me? Or like when I do see people, like, what's wrong with me? Or why am I so awkward that it's hard to reach out to people again? Invite yourself somewhere, girlfriend. There's no shame in inviting yourself somewhere. And that's hard. I'm not saying that's an easy thing to do. I do have an outgoing personality. So there's things about different situations in life that are going to be easier for some people than others. I'm not here to tell you it's all your fault. But I do think that especially as a military spouse, and especially as women, we need to take a little bit more of the reins. This isn't about what's happening to me. I'm completely normal. This is about what I can now bring into the world and what I want for my life and make it happen. Because we can. You can make your life exactly what you want it to be. I don't care if you don't decide where you live. If the government and the military then tells you where you have to go every 3 years, that does not mean you don't have control over your life. And I think so many women just decide they have no control over their lives. So they're just going to lay back and let their spouse's career kind of drive the wheel. They're just driving your location.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it is. You got the rest of this, girlfriend. But so I think that's this whole, you're completely normal and able to take into the military world is, listen, you can live a life that is really fulfilling for you. You can recognize there's not anything wrong with you, even in difficult circumstances, which you're going to face. You're completely normal as a military spouse. And being completely normal means you have the ability to do whatever works for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's not blowing my mind, but it's getting my mind going of just all the different ways that thinking that you're behind keeps you, and by you, I mean me, but I'm saying you, so then you guys all listening can think of ways it's keeping you from doing things because you think you're behind, and that's a helpless feeling as opposed to being empowered and thinking that we, or not thinking, but knowing that we have control. Like So the pregnancy brings on a whole bunch of stuff, but it's also, I'm thinking of a million different things. Like the fact that downstairs, I bought a rug today and now the rug and the plant and the couch look how I want it to. The couch, we're going to get a new couch soon. So like I can see the new couch, but then it's, oh, but the walls aren't the color that I want them to. But because I didn't think, I don't know, just for 2 years because of circumstances, because we moved here, I was super pregnant. Husband was preparing for a deployment type of thing. So it was never like we couldn't, just the opportunity was not easy to paint. I don't want to say we couldn't have painted. We could have, and we probably should have painted, but we didn't paint, and now we're only here for a little bit. So it's, but it got to the point where it's like, oh, but now I'm behind because I'm however old I am. I'm 29 and we don't really have the house we want, which isn't the Army's fault. It's my fault. But then it's, but I had control the whole time and I could just do it now if I wanted to, but I don't know.
No, that's a good example of feeling. So you feel like you're behind already. So then you feel paralyzed in being behind. And then you feel it's too late. What's the point? But all those thoughts, they snowball. And it's such a good example, right? And that's a great example of how our lives can snowball into this paralyzed thing. And you wake up and you've lived somewhere for 3 years and you never liked what you lived in.
That is exactly where I am. And now we just found out we're not moving when we thought we were. So it's pushed back 6 months. So we're going to be here an extra longer. So do I paint or do I not? And, but again, but it's, so I'm like, as you're talking, I'm spiraling on so many examples of that. And it's so interesting when you really start thinking about it.
Listen, there are logistical things that are going to be difficult, right? Like, that's just going to be the way it is.
If you are pregnant, please do not paint your whole house by yourself. That might not fumes. That's not what I'm saying. Please don't.
Consult your doctor.
Yeah.
But it reminds me even of like fitness, right?
Yeah.
For me, that is one of those areas where it's going to lose the weight. I'm just going to get pregnant again. And I'm just going to gain it all again. I'm going to have a baby. And then we're moving. And my husband raising two kids, right? Like, there's just not a good time. And meanwhile, this is not about size. This is about how you feel and like your energy level. So meanwhile, I'm like, not feeling great. And so with each of my kids, just to be transparent, what I'm talking about here, my first, I gained 75 pounds when I was pregnant. I did lose 60. Then I gained 75 with my second. So I ended up 90 pounds above my pre-pregnancy weight when I was my most pregnant. And so I was like, oh gosh, like nothing fits. I feel completely uncomfortable. All of these things. And it's not that it's not beautiful what our bodies do, raising our, building our children into actual men.
Going from this to this that's nuts. Not even a hobby. Yeah.
It's insane. And I am down with some cellulite and I'm totally cool with whatever mommy pooch. I don't care. But what I do care about is the fact that I was at a point that I was just unhealthy and I was uncomfortable and I was insecure because of those things. And I was like, wait, I can't just keep being paralyzed in the state of feeling behind when I see these pictures of like moms who seem to be confident or that they're in good shape. And I was feeling bitter towards them. Who do I think they are? And I still have take issue with people who focus too much on bodies and that. But that being said, this past year, I was like, you know what? I'm writing a book, I'm raising a newborn, have a toddler, I'm living in Alaska, and there's never going to be a good time to lose the 80 pounds I really need to lose. And so last year, while writing a book and taking care of my babies and the whole thing, I went ahead and lost 70 pounds. And it was crazy. It was the hardest thing. And like, you put the baby down for the nap, you run to the garage, I hopped on the elliptical, I'm like sweating, like praying that the baby stays asleep on the monitor. Yeah. And then I'm running in getting my kids. And then there's the second nap of the day. And I got to get my word count in during the second nap of the day. I'm writing a book and I'm publishing and I have all this going on. And it was a crazy to say the least. But man, I'm so glad I did it. And I'm so glad I stopped being paralyzed and realized like that I could control those things. And it was not easy. And I'm not saying everyone should do the way I did it and write a book and have a baby and lose 70 pounds in 1 year. Like I'm not saying that I'm amazing for doing that, nor am I saying anyone should do that. I'm just
because
saying
they're not behind.
You're not behind. You just have to figure out what you actually want. I realized I actually didn't, it was taking more of my energy to every single day be mad that I didn't fit into my clothes and that I was out of breath or whatever. I was spending way more energy being pissed about that than it took just to run for 30 minutes on the elliptic. You know what I mean? I had to figure out what worked for me. And that's what worked for me. So anyways, all that to be said is I feel like as military wives, we often feel like our environment controls us. And that's just not true.
Yeah. So yeah, it's true. And it's, and especially if you had been worrying, if while you had been doing that, you had spent the energy, which I think takes its toll mentally or takes its toll physically, even though we may think it's all mental, but like it takes time to worry about I'm behind or what are they gonna think? Where if you just do your thing, then you actually get what you want and then you're happier, which, and then you're thriving and then that's what we want, which is, but yet we just keep on falling back on it. So interesting.
It's exhausting. It is exhausting to try and keep up with what you think you should be doing. Mm-hmm. Not only is it uninteresting because it creates little Stepford clones. Everyone only has one kind of life to talk about, but it's just really tiring. And then to not even know what you want. I don't know. I just don't think that it's beneficial. It doesn't actually, we think it takes a load off our plate maybe to try and just do the normal thing. At least in a sense, it takes us off the hook of really doing that work to dig down deep into our own souls and figure out what makes us tick and what we really want. But you're going to be living in the shallow end of life if you just go through the steps and go through the motions and you get the good stuff when you go into the deep end. And yeah, it might take a little bit more work. It might feel more tiring from the get-go. It might feel like you're rubbing certain people the wrong way because you're doing it different from them. You might feel judged. Okay, yeah, that's not as fun as just sticking to the timeline and impressing people on the outside, right? At the end of the day, you're going to be so much happier because you're going to be living a life that is tailored exactly to who you are as a human being. And let me tell you, as somebody who's worked really hard to get to that point, my life's not perfect, but it's pretty darn close. And I'm so grateful. A lot of that is privilege. A lot of that is luck. A lot of that is support and amazing relationships in my life. But a lot of it is me making sure and doing the work to figure out what works for me and saying, I'm going to do it. I don't care what you think. I don't care. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my baby to the office and run an entire department as the assistant director of development for the TV shows for the reality television production studio I was part of. And they basically were promoting me. And I said, I can't do it. I want to breastfeed my kid. I don't want to put him in daycare. And they said, okay, bring him to the office. And I was like, okay, I want my own office. So I don't have to be awkwardly breastfeeding and running around. And I want a window and I want this much money. And it was ridiculous. You know what I mean? But I knew what would make me thrive. I was like, otherwise I'd rather just stay home with my kid. But if you want to give me an environment that works for me, then you can do that. And they did. They did. And I worked hard and it was great. And he came with me to the office until I realized that was making me crazy. So then I figured out what actually worked for me after that. Okay. Part-time help. But I think so many of us are afraid to say what we really want than to actually go after it and push other people to ensure that we get that. And again, there's a certain level of privilege that comes with that, right? If he had turned me down, I was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And so you have, but that also is a lesson, right? If you go into things with confidence and that you're focused on what your standards are, you're generally going to get better results because people do respect when you have standards for your life and what you want to do. It's a kind of a really lovely snowball effect.
Yeah. And again, this applies to your career or gosh darn it, the walls downstairs. I go buy the paint because I want the paint and I'm just afraid of asking for the paint, but I just have to ask for the paint and then I'll look at my walls and smile instead of eh. It's so fascinating that the same principle applies to not polar opposites, but that's pretty different spectrums or not spectrums. You guys know
it. Like this, it's the whole book is, sorry, this is my, I'm showing if people are not watching her on the screen and it's my author copy. So there's like a line across my face on the cover, but the whole book, it has from parenthood to home ownership, to relationships, to careers, to hobbies and activism, to faith, to friendships, to your image, your social media image, all of that. There's 9 different chapters here and they couldn't be more different. They're across the board. But that's what's so fun about this concept of being completely normal, giving you the power to create a life that works for your kind of normal, because it applies to every area of life, from fitness to parenthood, to your relationship, to your faith, to all of it. Like, you can figure out your own path and that works for you, whether you want to paint your room or you don't want to paint your room or whatever, like that's up to you. And I say to always just go for it, right? Yeah. If you're going to be there for another 6 months, what is the point of not liking your room for 6 more months? If it's going to be one day of you having to put all the furniture in the middle of the room and it sucks and it's pain and you do it and it's, oh, that Saturday sucked. But then you get 6 months of enjoying it. I think we all get caught up on the day, right? Yeah. And that's normal. That's for me. I'm sitting in my bedroom here because this is the only place in the house where the kids can't get in. Yeah. And it is, I'm the same boat as you. I love our kids' rooms. They have like cute decals and wallpaper and our living room's great. And it's so cute. And our bedroom, oh, I walk in here and we have another year and a half here. Shannon, buy some new curtains. But I get that. It's hard sometimes, but we got to create our normal and make a world that's beautiful for us to live in.
Yeah. I love it. What's your key to thriving you want to share with your fellow waiting warriors?
To don't save the good wine. I think that obviously you're completely normal would work too, but don't save the good wine. My key to thriving is really celebrating the everyday kind of parts of my life that create this weirdo normal human that I am. Celebrating just basic things with my husband and things that he's doing and our kids and whatever it is. If we have any tiny reason to crack open the good wine, we do take it very literally in this household. I just really think that's a fun one to think about. Don't save the good wine, because that's going to help you thrive. You're not going to just sit back and live an average life if you're drinking the good wine, right? Yeah. Like, you're bringing out You're not just saying, oh, that's a really cute quilt that somebody made for my baby. And then you hide it away because you don't want it to get dirty. No, you put that quilt on your kiddo's bed when they're not a baby. Okay, safe sleep. But take out the good stuff, like use the things in your life and celebrate when you can and take the big steps that you feel should be saved for a special occasion or someday when I get the career I want, when I finally get married, when I finally am able to conceive children, when I instead say no, like today is a day we're celebrating. I am grateful. And that's a whole nother thing. We should be grateful. I'm not saying that gratitude can cover over pain or disappointments or that those things aren't valid. But I'm just saying if you approach every single day like it is worth celebrating because of who you are in a very unique way, then you're going to thrive and it's not going to be boring and you're not going to spend your days wasting away in front of Netflix, even though Bridgerton is amazing. You're not going to waste your life away when you're celebrating with the good wine. And so I hope that can help people thrive.
Yeah, I love it. So what's a good way for people to connect with you? Say thank you, get a hold of the book if they want to, and then just if people want to keep talking about this concept.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Instagram at Shannon Leyko, L-E-Y-K-O. So that's a little bit tough. My maiden name was Oliver, and then I married a guy whose last name is like impossible to say. But anyways, it is what it is. So Shannon Leyko. My book is in certain independent stores, but it's probably easiest for you to buy online on Amazon. You're Completely Normal, trading where you think you should be for where you want to go. It'll probably pop up. I'm super fortunate it became a bestseller when it debuted on Amazon. Yeah. That is a pretty easy thing to find. And you can also find me on my blog, The Expert Brief. I did this on the last podcast I was on. I can't say my own blog name for some reason. TheExpertBeginner.com. And even though there's a lot of like fun things in there that talk about motherhood and relationships, and even I do like bachelor recaps, which is a whole nother story. But The Expert Beginner is really a life as a military wife and beginning again every 3 years. And everything we're doing, just like we talked about here today, is learning how to be an expert at new things. And so that's TheExpertBeginner.com. And yeah, I'm looking forward to connecting with people.
All good things.
All good things.
Thanks again, Shannon. And Waiting Warriors, remember, just because it's hard doesn't mean it has to be miserable. Have a good week, guys.
All of you Waiting Warriors know that life as a military spouse can be unpredictable. So it's easy to think that when it comes to our aspirations and dreams, you have to wait. But it doesn't have to be like that. National University is a veteran-founded nonprofit university that is firmly committed to helping military dependents. Not only are their programs flexible so you can time your assignments around things like deployments, PCSs, all the other crazy things, they have a scholarship just for military spouses. Use the link in the podcast summary or over on my Instagram bio to learn more about the Whisper Military Spouse Scholarship and the other options they have for tuition reduction for military spouses that could result in zero out-of-pocket educational costs at National University.